and welcome to another episode of Admit One, the film podcast that delves into the cinema viewing habits of film fanatics from across the arts. This week, I'm chatting British films with a very special guest in the Admit One studio.
I just think he has a very beautiful way of telling our personal stories, and within that film you have got so many examples.
She's an award-winning broadcaster, BAFTA winner, journalist, author and dog lover, Claire Balding.
That's again a real story well told, and you don't have to add too much to the good stories. You don't have to over egg pudding because they're there.
Thank you so much for coming and doing this.
You're welcome.
So films, your love of films, I'd love to go right back to the beginning. Do you have a first memory of films or cinema?
I think the first film I went to see was Bambi, which was a really bad choice because it left me broken, completely broken. I mean, it's heartbreaking. It really is. That is not a film for children.
For children and or animal lovers.
No, awful. And then I also remember fairly early on going to see the film of Watership Down because I grew up right next to Watership Down. Again, bad choice.
Awful.
But I grew up right next to Watership Down and walked on it and ridden on it many times. So as far as I was concerned, I knew those rabbits and I knew what they did. And there's even a scene in the book, which I don't think made it into the film, where they hear the thunder of hooves and they're up on the gallops and the racehorses are coming, and those are my dad's racehorses, the ones he trained. So I felt a very close connection with Watership Down.
I mean, very emotional
cartoon films. Yeah, but also slightly scary. Do you remember? I mean, the music's lovely and that's all Bright Eyes and Art Garfunkel. The music's great. But it's really creepy and it's very, it does jump out of the screen at you. And I think I'm a bit careful now when I take my nephews and my niece to films, because even if they sell it as a children's film, it doesn't always mean it is.
Claire, you've had a hugely successful career as a presenter, a broadcaster. It's quite a hard question, but do you think you could pick
could be
highlights?
An actor? Oh, I thought you were going to say, do I think I could be an actor?
That was going to be a question as well.
Yes, because one day I will win a BAFTA or an Oscar for acting. That in my dream, I sometimes wake up in the middle of the night and say, oh my God, I just was on stage. And they finally recognised my just incredibly chilling portrayal of some, you know, murderous woman.
Well, you starred in potentially one of my favourite shows, W1A.
I did.
Claire as Claire Balding.
Yes. Well, as a version of myself.
As a version of yourself.
My father actually rang me after he saw it and said, you were so horrid to that poor boy. I said, Dad, I was acting. He said, well, I just think you should have been nicer. It's like, no, that's what they wanted me to play. The whole point was that I was, you know, slightly bad-tempered and fractious and difficult.
I loved it. You versus Carol Vorderman.
That's it.
It was so hilarious.
And actually, Carol and I were reunited in another little cameo performance recently for Ant and Dec on the Who Stole the Crown Jewels series on Saturday Night Takeaway. And I now have kids coming up to me saying, who stole the crown jewels? Because as if I would know, because I was one of the agents and so was Carol, that were trying to find the perpetrators and help Ant and Dec. My big scene hasn't gone out yet.
I was about to say, do we get to find out? Because that is a real teaser.
I'm not in the scene where they find out, so I genuinely don't know. But I have a scene with Alan Titchmarsh, of course. And Alan Titchmarsh was dressed in a balaclava for one of his scenes. And I have a photo on my phone of him and I sitting having a chat together. And he's in his balaclava and his black outfit dressed as a ninja. And I said to him, Alan, I think we're on a break and I think we're about to have lunch. And really, you don't need to be wearing that balaclava. And he'd been sitting there for 20 minutes in it. And he said, oh, but I'm so enjoying it. And I said, and it's so you.
I've always thought of Alan Titchmarsh as something of a method actor.
That's it. Exactly.
He was the thief.
Yeah.
Now, you did mention BAFTA, but I happened to be in the audience when I saw you and applauded you going on stage for a BAFTA. I mean, it wasn't for
acting.
For acting.
No, that will, day
I mean,
will come.
You know, you've got the BAFTA and it's halfway there.
And I pretend that it is, actually. So it doesn't say on it. I mean, it's a special award and that could be for anything.
Yeah.
So
special
obviously,
actress.
Yes, in my head, that is my acting BAFTA. It's just they didn't necessarily stipulate that.
It's open to interpretation.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you get asked this a lot for career highlights? Is that just like, oh God, am I being asked this again?
No, because it's really easy.
You've done so many different things.
Yeah.
What has been
so easy.
A defining moment? Because I feel like I want to guess it.
Go on then.
I would say, I love it, ask a question then answer it myself. I would say your presence at Olympics 2012.
Exactly. And that's it. And I'll tell you why, because in our lifetime, there is only going to be one Olympic Games in our country. And if you get your timing right, which luckily I did, that was my fifth Olympic Games. So I kind of knew how they worked in the sense of where, because the layout is always the same wherever you are. So it doesn't matter if it's Beijing or Athens or London, the main press centre and the International Broadcast Centre will always be together, and they will always be one side of the park and the venues will be the other side. So I wasn't in awe of being at the Olympics. I had done plenty of Olympics and I was totally prepared to just immerse myself in it. So I properly felt it. I was properly in that Games and I thought of nothing else. I talked to people on the way into the swimming venue. I talked to people in the evening. It was the perfect Games for me.
With all the people that you've worked and presented alongside and interviewed, have you ever felt starstruck?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, Boris Becker is a very intimidating man. Oh. Well, you're slightly worried, obviously, that if you shake hands with him, you might get pregnant. But, you know, there is that. But
he's find yourself in a cupboard.
Yeah, exactly. But he is a big man. He's a big, strong man with incredibly intense blue eyes. And he stares at you as if the question you've asked him is the most, you know, thought-provoking thing that's ever been said, which of course it rarely is. And he is quite, he doesn't mean to be, he's very friendly and very nice. And John McEnroe as well, for a different reason, he doesn't really connect with you. So he's great when you're on air. And actually he was really good to me a couple of years ago. He was very good to me last year at Wimbledon, but 2 years ago when we were getting a lot of flack because we changed the programme, blah, blah, blah. He was really supportive on air and off, and in a way that I wasn't expecting. And so I sort of got over the, oh my God, you're John McEnroe hump. Usain Bolt is very laid back, very cool.
You got some great sportsman examples
here. Yeah, he's good.
He looks like a charming, charismatic, funny guy.
Yes, Bolt. Yeah, he is. And he sort of oozes sex appeal, you know. Quite often it's because they're tall and they're big and they seem even bigger in real life.
With your work as a broadcaster, when you were going into it, did you have someone who was something of a mentor? Someone who was a couple of steps ahead, kind of championing your work?
Ellie Oldroyd, who is a fantastic broadcaster on Five Live. And she was always very supportive. And I remember when I first met her, I was a trainee at Five Live. And I was really excited to meet her. She said, oh my God, I used to listen to you on Newsbeat when I was at school. And it's true, I did. But she looked at me and went, yeah. Mm. Thanks for that. Because I was very young when I joined the BBC. You know, I was fresh out of university. I was about 22, 23.
Wow, that's something
like
young,
that.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And I had listened to Ellie through my sixth form years, but absolutely, I knew who she was. And she'd switched from Radio 1 Newsbeat to football was her big love, football and cricket. And so she'd switched to the sports department. And we were both around the same time, pretty rare female voices on the radio talking about sport. So she's been great all along. Yeah.
Have you been asked to choose your favourite films before?
I'm not sure I have. Certainly not three of them, no.
Did you find it quite a hard question? Because some people have refused to choose three. We've made them. They've said, this is only my three for today.
Well, the weirdest thing is you sort of have short-term memory loss because you think, hang on, I can't, you know, I know the films that I just saw and I'm a member of BAFTA, as we've discussed, obviously, for my special award for the would-be actress. And I therefore get sent all of the year's films because I need to vote. And so the last sort of 3 or 4 years, I've watched way more movies than I ever had done.
Oh, what a great way, because it's always January and February.
Yeah.
You know, perfect way to start the year watching all the
And some of them
films.
Are just fabulous. And a friend of, you know, I have a friend who has a media room. So we go around her house and watch it with popcorn in proper containers.
Oh.
And she does the cooking and we sit there and her husband, Ben, is in the city. So he understands, like The Big Short. He totally understood it all. I loved The Big Short. I thought that was a great film. But he could explain it to us as well and then tell us why it was likely to happen again, which is slightly frightening. Yeah.
Now, Claire Balding, we've talked about you, your career, your relationship and love of films. What's the first film we're going to talk about today?
Did I say Four Weddings or did I say Notting Hill?
Oh, well, no, this is great because that's one of my questions. How did you choose Richard Curtis? You said Love Actually.
Did I say Love Actually?
Yes.
Oh, OK. Well, that's fine.
But that's
Love
very
Actually's
telling
fine.
Because yes. It's hard to choose from the three. Yeah.
So I nearly went for Notting Hill because of the Horse and Hound line in it, which is great. You know,
William Thacker.
When Hugh Grant is trying to interview Julia Roberts and pretends that he's from Horse and Hound, just makes me laugh so much. Four Weddings and a Funeral, classic. But Love Actually, I think, is a defining film. If you don't like Love Actually, I don't want to know you.
Claire, that's so funny you say that, because we were discussing earlier about how Love Actually is one of those films.
Yeah.
I love it. I watch it annually.
Yes.
But some people find it too sugary. I love the love.
Yeah. And I've stood. I went to pick my American cousin up from Terminal 3, Heathrow. And I stood there, unfortunately, for about an hour and a half because they were taking a long time through customs. I thought I'd timed it so well. The plane had already landed. And I always think, that's great. I won't be long.
You're like, I've nailed it.
Yeah. And then they were a long time. Anyway, I watched people arrive, and it is so heartwarming and life-affirming to see the love and people running the full length of that and sliding towards people. People dressed up with banners and balloons to welcome somebody home. Little kids getting really excited because Granny's coming and they haven't seen Granny for ages. I mean, it's just brilliant.
There is something magic in it. I mean, yeah. Richard Curtis starting the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
with real arrivals. You know, that's a real scene. And I just think he has a very beautiful way of telling our personal stories. And within that film, you have got so many examples. I made the mistake once, though. I'm going to do a massive name drop here. I was on the Jonathan Ross show after 2012, when life went a bit mad, with Liam Neeson and Justin Bieber. Now, but just,
oh.
I mean, you know how you do it. How
what
you are.
Mix.
So I'm sat on the sofa. Oh, and the Killers. I'm sat on the sofa.
All the gang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brandon Flowers. Hi. I'm sat on the sofa, Justin Bieber and Liam Neeson. And usually with anyone from Ireland, it's really easy because they like their racing. So I just talk horses. But Liam Neeson is the only Irishman I've ever met who doesn't like horses or racing. And he's also hadn't been in the country for London 2012. So we had nothing to talk about except for me saying, God, Love Actually, one of my favourite films, which he then said, they cut out all my best bits. I was like, OK, we now have nowhere to go. So I turned to talk to Mr. Bieber.
Did you have more in common with Liam Neeson or Justin Bieber?
Well, I actually, this was before Justin went off the rails.
Mm.
And I said to him, oh, are you over here on tour? Are you just promoting a CD? And he said, well, ma'am, I'm, and I immediately felt 103, but well, ma'am.
Ma'am.
Yeah, I'm just here for the CD, but or for the single, and then I'm go back, and then I'm back here on tour. Anyway, I had been at the BBC that morning, and he was staying in the Langham right opposite, and there were all these barriers up and these girls screaming. And when we arrived at ITV Studios on South Bank, same thing, all these girls screaming. And I'd been thinking about it all day, thinking, what is the point of that? I mean, what is that about? If you scream loudest, he'll marry you? Really?
The hysteria.
So
it doesn't make sense,
him,
actually, does it?
But I said to him, and it must have sounded odd because it was sort of coming out of nowhere. He didn't realise I'd been thinking about it all day. I said, you know when the girls, they're kind of lined up like that and they're screaming at you, what do they want? And he looked at me and said, what do they want? They want me, ma'am. Okay, yes, of course they do. Sorry. Yeah,
yes.
Is
oh.
The what? Is
now that, you've answered it.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, of course
yes.
They do. Anyway, I don't know is the art. Neither. Brandon Flowers is who I had more in common with.
That is hilarious. Of all the love stories in Love Actually, which resonates the most with you? Which kind of really gets your attention? Because with me, I'm kind of torn between Colin Frizzell. And he's got a big knob. That one.
Yes, yes.
And his adventure to find love in the US. And then, of course, Billy Mack's love for his manager, Bill Nighy.
Yeah,
He's dreamy.
No, see, that's one I don't really believe. I don't really
don't
believe
you?
That one. I mean, it's sweet and it's, I think, more loyalty than love. But I liked Martin Freeman and that brilliant, brilliant actress. And they're doing the nude modelling scenes. And I do love the Martin McCutcheon, Hugh Grant, you know.
It is adorable.
Mm.
It is adorable, which is why I kind of agree with you. Who
and also
love actually?
Keira Knightley and Andrew Lincoln, Egg from This Life.
Well, see, this is what I think people debate, because if you really think about it, he's trying to steal his best friend's wife.
No, he's not. He's not trying to steal her. He has stopped himself from stealing her because she's marrying his best friend.
So, oh gosh, well, Richard Curtis, with us talking about your three favourite films, but I did say sort of your three favourite British films, Richard Curtis and his collection of Yeah. Very quintessentially British films.
Any one of them would do. I'm happy to watch any of them.
Yeah, I mean, they just have that British sense of humour, that kind of British group of friends.
But also, we're so bad at love because we don't say it. Nobody's honest in this world. And, you know, I come from a very British family. And, God, to try and get anyone to say what they actually think is so difficult. And then they tell you something and they tell somebody else something else. I mean, that life is like that. It goes round and round in circles. People saying near truths and not quite.
When I say British film to you, British cinema, what does it make you think?
It makes me think beautiful colours, actually. Beautiful locations, understated acting, audible script, audible and eloquent. But usually the sound is fantastic, great music, sweeping scenery, you know, just that, and mist. It makes me think mist and sort of early morning light and great car chase scenes, traffic scenes. I mean, I do think the James Bond franchise has done amazing things for British cinema in terms of creating a sort of a brand that's very classy. That classy is the word. That's
classy
what I'd use
for, is the word. Yes. I agree with you on that.
And hugely comic. Most of the time, there is, even in our highest thriller genre or indeed high drama, you will get great comic scenes.
If I asked you to choose a favourite actor, do you have one?
Julie Walters. And for her range of roles and what she can do on the screen, I think she's amazing. And going back to your starstruck question, I did meet her once and I was pathetic. And same with Emma Thompson. I was pathetic both times and I apologise to both of them for not being able to say anything coherent, but I was starstruck.
So it's strong, smart women.
Oh, yeah. And funny, I was looking at films, I was trying to find films in which you get a strong female role, but I ended up not being able to do that. So went down the sports route for the other. Well, I did with one. With one, I'd gone for it completely because it has a lot of good female roles.
Segue me beautifully into both of your next films. So what's our second choice? What's your second choice?
Champions is my second choice, which I will pretty much guarantee no one else will choose.
You might have to tell us what Champions is about, Claire. Champions, 1984, the true story of Bob Champion.
Mm. Bob Champion was a jockey who had... He was a middling to... Yeah, sort of medium successful jockey. And he got testicular cancer. And he was... treated and given very severe chemo and given hardly any chance of getting back, and certainly not much chance of getting back in time for the Grand National of 1981, which he was desperate to ride in because he'd developed a very good relationship with a horse called Aldeniti, who was trained by Josh Gifford. And true life is stranger so many times than fiction. He got back to ride in the race and they won the Grand National of 1981. And it was one of the most just emotional moments. And I was 10 at the time.
And you remember watching it.
Oh, my God, I remember watching it. But also I'd met Bob Champion. I'd met Aldeniti, or certainly did afterwards. I knew Josh Gifford. His daughter was the same age as me. And she subsequently rode at the Olympics, actually, called Tina Gifford and then Tina Cook. She rode in London and was world champion on Minus Frolic. And, you know, is a good friend of mine now. And I knew the setup. You know, my Uncle Toby won the Grand National in 1969. And again in 1989 with Little Polvere. My dad's a racehorse trainer, my uncles were both racehorse.
It's
so
in your blood.
It was very much a film, and I knew, and therefore I could spot things that were incorrect. And quite a lot of the time, if I watch racing series on telly, I can't watch it because so much of it is wrong and it just gets frustrating. But with this, I just loved it. I mean, John Hurt did such a good job playing Bob Champion. And it was just, I just thought it was really, really well told. The story was beautifully told and the action scenes were great. And as you're aware, Aldeniti played himself.
So Aldeniti starring as Aldeniti.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for a film to be made, 3 years after the actual event, that's a really fast turnaround. So this was a huge sporting national story.
Yeah.
That must have really resonated with so many people for it to be made into a film.
Yeah, and the Grand National does have a special magic. I mean, National Velvet was about Elizabeth Taylor becoming the first woman to win the Grand National. You know, it has a public resonance, I think, that no other race really has. And I'm a big supporter of the Derby, but I don't think as many people connect with the Derby the way they do with the Grand National. And it is an impossible challenge. I mean, you can't, for anyone to do that 100% fit on a horse that was 100% fit would be difficult. And Aldenisi himself was very fragile. He'd just come back from an injury. Bob obviously had been seriously ill and his career effectively over. For both of them to perform the comeback they did was just beyond romance.
Do you see that as something of a kind of sporting medical miracle?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah, I just think it was
a magic
great
moment.
Yeah, you know, I love, there's lots of sports films that I mean Chariots of Fire would be on my shortlist as well, because I just think that's again a real story well told, and you don't have to add too much to the good stories. You don't have to over egg the pudding, because they're there. It's just, and again, Chariots of Fire, beautifully shot. Beautifully shot.
Beautiful
and the scene
music
of them. Yeah, lovely music, yes. Obviously, and used at the opening ceremony of London 2012 with Rowan Atkinson playing that theme tune. To great comic effect, very British. But yeah, that scene of them running along the beach, I mean, was shot, just on that beach is by St Andrews Golf Course. Because I remember when I was up doing the Open at St Andrews, they were all going on about, oh, that's the Chariots of Fire beach. Oh. Yeah, and there's a certain light up there. You know,
we do like to be educational on Admit One as
yes,
well. So
good.
That's a nice little
fact. I've chosen Champions, but brackets Chariots of Fire, brackets National Velvet, brackets any other sports film.
Smuggling in more films there, Claire. So we've covered Champions, and earlier on you mentioned Watership Down and Bambi. So as an animal lover, what do you think interests you more? A kind of David Attenborough style or true story documentary, or an animal based kind of more feel good, I want to say romantic, but that's
like
not
Finding
right.
Nemo and Finding Dory.
Yes.
I did cry at Finding Dory. And
well,
I was
we also love Ellen DeGeneres, don't
oh, we?
We
do. Oh, God, yeah, we do. Her. Yes. You see, she was an actress first. I'm going to do it the other way round.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, you got the BAFTA. We just need to kind of scratch off the engraving.
Scratch off special
actress.
Award and put, special actress, I could make it say that. Yeah, I do. I love oh, gosh, Marley and Me. Did you watch that?
Sobbed.
Yeah. Oh, there's a book that I read a few years back called The Art of Racing in the Rain. I don't know whether I think they did make that into a film. I haven't seen it. And I started crying at page one and basically couldn't stop. I was snotting all over the pages. It was so upsetting. Black Beauty, big favourite of mine.
Oh. Do you quite love a weepy film?
Yes. Well, I weep quite easily.
So, I mean, some films catch you off guard. I mean, it happens to all of us. But, you know, sometimes you just want to sit down, you know, with your popcorn, bag of Maltesers, and have a good cry.
Yeah, both.
And Claire, your third and final film for us today, please.
My third and final film is Calendar Girls. And I just saw the musical recently, The Girls, with the music by Gary Barlow. And I went to the press night. I took my parents and sat behind the real women. The actual Calendar Girls. So I'm feeling very connected to this right now.
Did you?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it is a recent story. I mean, it's based on a true story of a group of Yorkshire women who produced a nude calendar to raise money. And this is in 99. So, again, it was such a powerful story that the turnaround and the film being made in 03, it's a gorgeous feel-good film.
You've got some of Britain's greatest ever actresses in there. I mean, Helen Mirren's in there, Julie Walters, Geraldine James, who I love, Celia Imrie's in there, Penny Wilton, Annette Crosby. It's a fantastic cast. And I just think finding a film that showcases British acting at its best in terms of the women is, I mean, for me, that's right up there. But I would pick any number of Julie Walters films. Billy Elliot would be another one that I just think she's magnificent in that.
What is it about Calendar Girls that made it into the top three for you?
Because I was trying to find a film that had strong female leads. And it's really hard to do. If you go down any of those lists of top British films, you'll find all your war films and your hero things and your Peter Sellers comedies and da-da-da. Very, very rare to find one that's about women. And that's why, you know, I love that film, but I love it because it's a great example of something I admire hugely.
It's so interesting you say that, because on Admit One, one of our previous guests is a woman called Karina Antrobus, who has founded the Bechdel Test Fest. And the Bechdel Test is, I mean, it started as just a lighthearted test off the back of this comic strip in the 80s, where you look at a film and you see if at any point in the film there's two women who both have names aren't just woman one, woman two, and they talk about something that isn't sex or a man. And actually, when you apply that to a lot of films, other than a romantic leading story, you are a bit stuck.
You're struggling.
But this has so much humour and so many different stories running through it that it's a brilliant example of, you know, a bit of girl power in it as well. Yeah. And female friendship, which I think is great in this film.
Yeah, and also all those concerns that one has about, you know, what am I going to do? What do I want to say? How do I want to look? Get kit off. I don't want to get my kit off. There's the insecurity in it is really well portrayed. And I think the strength they get from each other. And having met those women, it just means so much more to me. And it is, I mean, some of those characters are an amalgamation of the different women. So apart from the sort of two key roles, which are fairly easily identifiable, the others are bits and bobs of everybody. I just think it's brilliantly done.
It's an incredible story. And just the way it pokes fun but celebrates the WI,
yes.
I also think is hilarious.
Yes, and I went to speak at a WI meeting in Sandringham. And the reason I went, so the Queen is patron of the Sandringham WI, well, she's a member of the Sandringham WI, and every January when she's at Sandringham, they have a special meeting that she attends, and they get a different speaker every year, and they asked me to do this. Alan Titchmarsh, my friend Alan, he'd done it, I think.
Method actor Alan.
Yeah, exactly. He went in his balaclava. lovely Carol Kirkwood, she did it a couple of years after. Various people. Anyway, they get somebody they think can talk about something that will interest the Queen. So it's the first WI meeting that I'd been to. And I didn't realise that they actually do sing Jerusalem. And obviously there are cake competitions. And there was a tea set competition, which, funnily enough, the Queen had a huge advantage in. She had various tea sets from back in Victorian times. Like, you can't compete with that. And then they did this.
Can't compete with the Queen.
They did a funny play as well. God, it was funny. And I had the two security men behind me who were absolutely killing themselves laughing. God.
I love this in Jerusalem. Dear. So it really is very accurate of that kind of community and culture of being a woman of that age in rural England, singing Jerusalem and baking cakes.
Yeah, and doing plays and, you know, going on adventures and, yes, brilliant.
Ah, to be British, I love it.
I know, it's the British village. That's village life.
Claire, as well as asking you to choose your three favourite films, what we do on Admit One is an additional final question, which is, if you could choose any actress or actor, living or dead, to play you in the story of your life, who would you choose and why?
Kate Winslet.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That was quick.
It's not like I haven't thought about this.
Yeah.
Because she was meant to be on a job I was doing in November, which was already pretty glitzy. I got to interview Helen Mirren, who's now my best friend, obviously, because we stayed up having a drink that night and had lots of conversation.
Oh, I bet you had fun, too.
Great value. She's brilliant. Nicole Kidman, Uma Thurman and Charlotte Rampling. So I'm interviewing all of them.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah, The Pirelli event.
The Pirelli calendar, exactly. So I was doing the press launch for it and then doing the gala dinner that evening. But when they asked me to do it, Kate Winslet, who's in the calendar this year, she was going to be doing it with me. And I said, oh my God, that's amazing. That would be just, this is now going to be the favourite event, most memorable thing ever. Whenever anyone asks me, what was your career highlight? The London Olympics gone. It's working with Kate Winslet.
Olympics, who cares? Kate Winslet,
yeah,
definitely.
Kate Winslet. Me and Kate, and I knew that we'd be friends straight away, and I knew that probably she'd ask me for Christmas, and certainly on holiday, and essentially we would be...
And then before you know it, you're both going to Necker with Richard Branson.
Exactly. And Alice is coming with me, and we're all great friends, and Kate's like, oh yeah, it's Claire and Alice, you know, obviously. Yeah. We're like this. And I just knew that we would get along famously, and we would be BFF. And then she pulled out, because she was filming, and I was really upset, actually. But Helen Mirren was a damn good substitute because she was cracking. Really good fun.
I'd be happy with Kate Winslet.
Kate's playing me in the film, obviously. Mm-hmm. And she'll do that, I think she'll do that very well. She'll have to cut her hair short and get the old layers going and, you know, a bit of that.
I love, and I mean, what...
Learn to ride. I think she can ride, actually.
What an iconic British actress to play you as well.
Yeah.
I mean, her, or, you know, again, understudy, we could get in Helen.
No, I think Helen has a role in it, but I don't think it's necessarily as me.
Oh, is she your best friend in it?
Well, I don't know, actually. I think she could play a very... Because Helen does good chilling. Helen could play my boss, you know, and I get into trouble. I mean, obviously, we're going to dramatise this slightly.
Yes, I know. I feel like we're slating a film. You heard it here first. The story of Claire Balding.
That's it. Yeah.
Claire, thank you so, so much for your time and coming on to Admit One. It has been delightful.
Thank you very much.
Don't miss next week's Admit One with the absolutely hilarious Jules and Sarah.
So maybe boys weren't really into Disney, so when it was Tarzan and Hercules, maybe the lads were like, not going to see Disney.
I was. Yeah. I was there. I knew that toga. I saw
everything.
His nipple and I knew. That was it, the turning point. Hercules' nipple.
God, I
just love his Grecian sandals and the way he lunges.
And if you're an advertiser and want to sponsor Admit One or any of Audioboom's other podcasts, drop us a line on advertising@audioboom.com for more details. Admit One with Antonia O'Brien is an Audioboom production.